Don't move, just leave your dial on a good ear monitor. Lean back and stay a while on a good ear monitor.
Brad Crandall, your host. Welcome aboard as Monitor continues to widen your weekend at home or on the road. A former FBI agent has written a bold, daring, brutally frank book about the Federal Bureau. And in less than 4 minutes, he'll zero in on, quote, silly rules and regulations, the FBI myth, and the Coke machine caper. Our leadoff team, the Lettermen, sing not less, but more.
More than the greatest love the world has known, this is the love I'll give to you alone. More than the simple words I try to say, I only live to love you more each day.
More than you'll ever know, my arms long to hold you so. My life will be in your keeping, waking, sleeping, laughing, wishing.
Longer than always is a long, long time. But far beyond forever, you'll be mine.
I know I've never lived before, and my heart is very sure no one else could love you more
than the greatest love the world has known. This is the love I'll give to you. More than the simple words I try to say, I only live to love you more each day. Is a long, long time. But far beyond forever, you'll be mine.
Have you ever been soaking up the sun at a beach or pool and suddenly some back-slapping friend does this to you?
Ouch! My sunburn!
Too much sun and how you suffer. That feel-on-fire feeling. A burning toss-and-turn can't sleep night. Also needless if you just use Solarcaine. Solarcaine stops sunburn pain fast. Faster and more completely than ordinary first aids. Why? Solarcaine contains pain-killing benzocaine used by doctors. It quiets your pain nerves, puts them to sleep. Solarcaine cools, soothes, aids healing too. Solarcaine contains two antiseptics, helps prevent infection.
Solarcaine has dozens of uses. Stops pain, sting of detergent hands, minor kitchen burns, little cuts and insect bites. I use Solarcaine a year round.
Get lotion, cream, or Solarcaine spray today. Stop skin pain with Solarcaine.
What's your mental picture of an FBI agent? A lean, athletic young man with the mind of a computer and the instincts of a bloodhound? A watchdog of public safety? A Superman who makes no mistakes? Well, for most of us, this is the image of an FBI man. But according to a new book called Inside the FBI, we may have this impression just because we never met an agent of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The book suggests that whatever else the FBI may be, it's still a government bureau, with all the red tape, occasional inefficiency, and bureaucratic politics that plague any other government agency. The author of this book, ex-FBI man Norman Olstead, is our guest today. Mr. Olstead, welcome to Monitor.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Mr. Olstead, many parts of your book turn out to be pretty funny. Is it your intention to hold the FBI up to ridicule in the book?
Well, not at all. My point is that there are two FBIs. The FBI that is the working force of the Bureau, the special agents, 90% of which do a tremendous job. The other FBI is the direction of the FBI, the leadership. And it's my intention in my book to point out that it is only by developing a sense of humor that a working FBI agent can exist in the FBI because of all the silly rules and regulations that the leadership has imposed on these working agents. Let me give you an example. If an FBI agent takes an FBI automobile out on a surveillance to tail a criminal, if he should follow too closely in traffic and get into an accident with that FBI car, the agent himself must pay for any damage to that FBI car. What I'm saying is that Mr. Hoover has not seen fit to insure against damage to FBI cars. And then he can go before Congress every year and say to Congress, look at how much money we've saved by not insuring FBI cars. But this is a tremendous burden on the working agents. And as I say, they must be philosophical about it and take it with a sense of humor, or otherwise they just couldn't exist.
Are a lot of these rules a result of the need to report to Congress to go and beg for money and justify the budget and the whole thing? I think
a lot of them come from this, and a lot of them come from the desire of Mr. Hoover to enforce a strict discipline within the Bureau. Mm-hmm. You have all kinds of rules. Like, there's an FBI rule that no FBI agent can ever be alone with a woman unless it's his wife. And you also have an FBI rule that Mr. Hoover must approve of any woman that you marry. Now, these rules are designed to really enforce a strict discipline on the working agent.
What's this about the big Coca-Cola mystery, for example?
Well, the FBI myth is a two-edged sword. It's useful and it's also dangerous. It's like anything else in life. You know, there are two sides.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI myth aids in capturing criminals because a lot of petty criminals believe that the FBI are Superman, and they expect to be caught, and therefore they make mistakes and they are caught. But the Coke machine caper, which occurred while I was in training school, is an example of the dangers inherent in trying to perpetrate the FBI myth. Now, of course, the FBI myth is that no one could possibly steal from the FBI and get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a Coke machine out on the firing range of the FBI training school, and lo and behold, someone through a very ingenious method, which I can't go into here, but got into that Coke machine and stole several dollars, $3 or $4 worth of change, and also a case of Cokes. Well, as it turned out, one of the new agents, turned out to be me, found out who did it. But the moral of the story was that it was more expedient to ignore the fact that the Coke machine had ever been robbed. So what we did, we all covered up for it. And when I went in to report it, I ended up having to pay my share of the loss to the Coke man. So not only wasn't I able to expose the criminal, but I had to make up the loss out of my own pocket.
This was because they didn't want to bring this culprit into court and admit that he'd been stealing successfully from them.
That's correct.
I see.
It would cause too much trouble.
Our monitor guest, former FBI agent Norman Olstead, author of Inside the FBI, has some frank comments on the reported feud between Director J. Edgar Hoover and former Attorney General Robert Kennedy. He'll cover that and much more in part two of our chat about 5 minutes from now. Our musical intermission, courtesy of Petula Clark.
You wander around on your own, little cloud, when you don't see the why or the wherefore. You walk out on me when we both disagree, 'cause to reason is not what you care for. Smart. then you take it to heart. 'Cause it hurts when your ego is deflated. Ooh, you don't realize that it's all compromise, and the problems are so overrated.
Former FBI agent, author of a book highly critical of the Federal Bureau, comments on friction between J. Edgar Hoover and former Attorney General Robert Kennedy. That's 1 minute away, here on the Monitor Beacon.
Here's important news for college freshmen, sophomores, and juniors. Now you can stay in college while you lay the groundwork for an exciting career in naval aviation. You train during 2 6-week summer sessions at Sunday, Pensacola, Florida, where you receive your college degree. You'll also receive a commission as a Navy officer. Aviation Reserve officer candidates may be single or married. For details, contact the U.S. Naval Air Station, New York, at Floyd Bennett Field, Brooklyn. Call Cloverdale 24242.
For a provocative and stimulating evening, join Long John Neville Mondays through Saturdays at midnight on WNBC, the big voice of Big Town USA. Long John, a man with matters on his mind, is of a mind to make them matter, by bringing you interesting people with something to say and no fear of saying it. Fair warning, though, once you've let Long John put you in touch with Big Town, you'll find yourself staying up all night waiting to hear what's next on the Long John Neville Show.
WNBC New York, the big voice of Big Town USA, is the sound of entertainment.
Monitor, back again at 21 minutes after the hour. A few moments ago, our Monitor guest, Norman Alstead, offered his opinions on what he feels are outmoded and silly rules and regulations within the Federal Bureau of Investigation. A former FBI agent, Mr. Alstead has written a hard-hitting book titled Inside the FBI. The book also gives wide coverage to a feud between FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover and former Attorney General Robert Kennedy. And Mr. Alstead tells Monitor how that feud got its start.
Well, I was around at the same time. I arrived just about the same time that they started easing Attorney General Kennedy into his position. And, of course, everyone got the word. When I say everyone in my new agents class got the word not to phone our girlfriends in California or Washington, or phone our mother from either the Justice Department phones or the old post office building phones in Washington, because Mr. Hoover had the phones tapped, and he would listen in at the oddest time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it seems everybody had the word except Attorney General Kennedy. And so, as a matter of fact, Mr. Hoover tapped his phone and listened in to a conversation in which Mr. Kennedy said that Mr. Hoover, in his opinion, was too old to run the FBI in 1960, and that when Mr. Kennedy, the president, would be reelected in 64, that Mr. Hoover was definitely out. Well, you can imagine the rumors and the alarm that spread through the FBI after hearing that, and this is what started the pot boiling. Well, let me tell you this. When Attorney General Kennedy took over the FBI, really, he's
the Attorney General, in effect, does run the
right,
FBI,
he is supposed to tell the director what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Mr. Kennedy believed the FBI myth, namely that Mr. Hoover worked longer and harder hours than any of his agents in spite of his age, and that all FBI men were in real good physical shape. And he suffered a disillusioning experience, too, because one day Mr. Kennedy walked in unannounced to Mr. Hoover's inner office and discovered Mr. Hoover taking a nap on the couch at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, there's really nothing wrong with this. A man that has worked as long and as hard as Mr. Hoover deserves a nap every day at 2 o'clock. But the point was that Mr. Hoover had been issuing all his propaganda to the effect that he worked longer hours than any of his agents that were only 25 years old. And this was the thing that apparently shocked Mr. Kennedy so much. And then the other incident was that the myth that all FBI agents are in tip-top physical shape, that they're like World War II commandos. Well, it seems that Mr. Kennedy popped down to the Justice Department gym one evening, because he works out every day to keep in shape, and found that the gym was locked up tighter than a drum and that no FBI agents use that gym. So it was a little disillusioning for him, too.
The problem to which you keep referring with the director, do you feel that in part this is just the result of one man in one position for too long?
Well, I certainly do. You've got to give credit where credit is due. And when Mr. Hoover came, he joined the FBI in 1919. And at that time, he had nothing to suggest that he would be a success with the FBI. He was merely a clerk in Washington that had a law degree. He had never tried a lawsuit in his life. He'd never arrested anyone in his life. And he'd never investigated a case in his life. As a matter of fact, he did a fantastic job. And he became acting director in 1924 and built the FBI up to the finest law enforcement agency in the world. And he built it by capturing criminals such as John Dillinger and Pretty Boy Floyd, flamboyant bank robbers. Now, what he has done, he has stuck to that winning combination. But the problem is, crime in America has become more sophisticated, and it has passed him by. The menace to the American economy is no longer the flamboyant bank robber that gets the headlines, but the big-time criminal that owns pieces of the Miami Beach hotels and the coin-operated machines and things like that.
And the numbers racket in the various communities.
Right.
And, like that,
and, and so Mr. Hoover has ignored these, and he has chosen to concentrate on these relatively petty criminals. Mm. And you get a situation like this. When all the big-time hoodlums in the United States gathered in upstate New York at the Appalachia meeting a few years ago, the FBI didn't even know about it. They were just ignoring the problem. And this is the real pity, because based on my experiences in the FBI, as I bring out in the book, there's a tremendous resource of fantastic investigators that the FBI has. And it's just a pity that Mr. Hoover is training the sights so low, because you see, if he would unleash this tremendous ability, the FBI could put a stop to organized crime in the United States, and they could do it right now.
Thank you very much, Mr. Olmsted.
You're welcome.
We've been talking with Norman Olmsted, former FBI agent and author of the book Inside the FBI.
If your skin is bothered by chafing and minor irritations, and you want it to feel comforted, soothe it with Ammons medicated powder. Ammons helps your skin's natural defenses with moisture absorbents to help keep skin dry, cool feeling, comfortable, with skin protectives to guard against rubbing and chafing.
And Ammons is an effective deodorant, too. Helps keep you fresh all over.
For the protection your skin needs, use Ammons every day.
Now, a Monitor News special. For a report on the latest developments at the emergency session of the United Nations Security Council on the Mideast crisis, here's Bill Fitzgerald.
The council met for an hour and 10 minutes, is now in a 30-minute recess. The main topic today is a discussion of a proposal by Secretary General U Thant to send UN observers to the Suez Canal area to investigate the ceasefire violations. U.S. Ambassador Arthur Goldberg supported the plan, as did the British Ambassador Lord Carradine. Today's session opened with a blistering attack on Israel by the Soviet delegate Nikolai Fedorenko. He called the Israeli government liars, said they were impudent and deceitful in attempting to assume the role of accuser before the Security Council. Fedorenko did not mention U Thant's plan to send the observers to both sides of the area where the ceasefire violations have occurred. Thant said 25 more observers would be needed to carry out the operation, but that it would have to have the approval of both Egypt and Israel. Obviously, that approval is now being discussed in the recess. Bill Fitzgerald, NBC News, New York.
Monitor will bring you continuing coverage from the United Nations as conditions warrant. Thank you. Reuben Mitchell and Lips and Legs. Monitor, a dependable, interesting, listening companion all across the nation. Example, Alexandria, Louisiana, where we're heard on station KSYL. The NBC Monitor station nearest you is ready to identify itself, and then we'll be right back. This is Brad Grandall.
Complete coverage of the All-Star Baseball game Tuesday on NBC Radio and Television.
On the go with the sound that keeps you in the know every weekend. Monitor 67.
Brad Crandall, your host, and 3 minutes away, Mel Allen with today's news and sports. But first, isn't there always a first? Monitor wishes a happy birthday to one of America's most popular songwriters, Jimmy McHugh, whose birthday is tomorrow. Tony Bennett adds his personal best wishes by doing a new version of an old McHugh standard.
Your coat and get your hat. Leave your worries on the doorstep. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear the pitter-pat? And that happy tune is your step. Life can be complete on the sunny side of the street. I used to walk in the city with those blues on parade. But I'm not afraid, because this rover crossed over. And if I never had a cent, I'd be rich as Rockefeller, with gold dust at my feet, on the sunny side of the street. I used to walk in a shade with those blues on parade, but I'm not afraid, because had a cent, I'd be rich as Harry Belafonte, with very gold water at my feet, on the sunny side
of the street. Helen, I'm home. What's for supper?
Hey, you're sure bright-eyed. I'd be bored to death with this housework routine day after day.
Busy mothers, women who can't afford to be dull, sharpen their wits with No-Dos. No-Dos Keep Alert tablets or new chewable mints, safe as coffee, help you keep up with people and conditions around you. So to fight off afternoon letdown,
sharpen your wits with No-Dos. No-Dos keeps you alert.
At the Monitor Sports Desk, Mel Allen with Today in Sports, plus a look at the week ahead.
Thank you very much, Brad. Hello there, everybody. Let's start out with the baseball results. Completed games only. In the National League, Philadelphia beat St. Louis 4-3 in 10 innings as Rick Wise bested Ron Willis. Home runs, Tony Gonzalez, Billy Cowan, and Richie Allen for Philadelphia. Houston shut out Chicago 6-0. Don Wilson, the winning pitcher, Rich Nye, the loser. The Cubs, who shared first place a week ago, have now lost 7 in a row. Pittsburgh nosed out Cincinnati 2-1. Dennis Rybant bested Jim Maloney. Willie Stargell homered for the Pirates. The New York Mets beat Atlanta 5-4. Hal Renneff, the winner, Dick Kelly, the loser. Home runs, Jerry Buchek and Ed Charles for the Mets. And for the Braves, Felipe Alou and Hank Aaron slamming his 22nd. San Francisco beat Los Angeles 1-0 in 10 innings. Mike McCormick bested Claude Osteen. In the American League, Minnesota took Chicago 7-4 in the first game of a doubleheader as Jim Cott beat Joel Horland, and Cott homered in his behalf. And in the first game of a doubleheader, Detroit beat Boston 10-4. Earl Wilson beat Gary Bell. Earl Wilson hitting a home run in his behalf of the Tigers. Dick McAuliffe also homered for Detroit. The second game was won by Boston 3-0 to end the Tigers' 7-game winning streak. Jim Lonborg besting Dave Wickersham. Home runs, Reggie Smith and Carl Yastrzemski for Boston. Yastrzemski's 19th. Washington took Cleveland 8-5 in the first game. Dick Lyons, the winning pitcher. Steve Bailey, the loser. Frank Howard hit his 23rd and 24th homers, tops in the majors. Ken McMullen also homered for Washington. And for Cleveland, Duke Sims and Max Alves. Washington took the second game 4-2. Barry Moore beat Sonny Siebert. Home runs, Bernie Allen, Dick Nen, and Fred Ballantyne for the Senators. Don Demeter for the Indians. Completing last night's suspended game, the Yankees beat Baltimore 3-1. Fritz Peterson, the winner. Stu Miller, the loser. And California beat Kansas City 4-2. George Brunette bested Lou Krause. The Angels' 6th win in a row as they move up. Don Mincher homered for L.A. And speaking of L.A., out there, the United States defeated the British Commonwealth in their dual track and field meet, 254-170. Today's highlights, Wade Bell of the USA defeated Kenya's Wilson Kipruget in a 145 flat 800 meters, and another Kenyan, Kip Keno, beat Australian world record holder Ron Clark in the 5,000 meters in 13:36.8. In golf, Frank Beard came from 2 strokes off the pace to win the Speedway Open in Indianapolis by 3 strokes. He had a final round 69, a 72-hole total of 279, 9 under par, his 3rd victory of the year, won $20,000. Tied for 2nd at 282, Rod Funseth, the leader during the first 3 days, and Reeves McBee. Looking ahead, tomorrow, the Major League Baseball Official Playing Rules Committee meets in Anaheim and the Western Clay Court Tennis Championships in Indianapolis. Tuesday, the All-Star Baseball game takes place. Will be heard on NBC Radio and TV from Anaheim. Wednesday, the International Lawn Tennis Federation votes on open tennis tournaments in Luxembourg, and the USGA Public Links Golf Championships take place in Seattle. Thursday, the British Open Golf Championship takes place at Hoylake, England, with Jack Nicklaus, the defending champion and overwhelming favorite. The Professional Bowlers Association Fort Worth Open. Saturday, the Pan American Games track and field trials in Minneapolis, and one of the biggest days of the year on the turf, the $102,000 added Hollywood Park Gold Cup, the $100,000 added Amory L. Haskell Handicap at Monmouth Park, the $75,000 added Dwyer Handicap at Aqueduct, and the $75,000 added Rockingham Park Special. And Sunday, the World Championship race for unlimited inboard hydroplanes at Expo 67. That's what is and will be in sports, Brad. Mel Allen here, friends, reminding you that for more features and news from the world of sports, stay tuned to Monitor.
Thank you, Mel. On Tuesday, a reminder now to follow all the action of the 38th Major League All-Star Baseball game from Anaheim, California, on NBC Radio and Television. Handling the coverage will be Sandy Koufax, Pee Wee Reese, and Tony Kubek, an all-star lineup in themselves. Remember, Tuesday, the all-star game on NBC Radio and TV. Monitor music now. Something new from the lady named Barbara. It's called Look.
The wise look for light from the strong. Look for for weeping in the lonely night.
Next, comedy by Bob Newhart. Then, a chat with Eugene Ormandy, conductor of the Philadelphia Orchestra, who just returned from a tour of Japan, where the orchestra received, well, let's say a wild audience reaction. And there's more, too, so stay on the Monitor Beacon.
Hi, this is Lee Leonard, and I'd like to know how you spend your afternoons from 1 till 4. Maybe, just maybe, if you're my kind of people, I'll invite you to spend them with me on WNBC. First of all, you have to like to laugh. Secondly, I'll expect you to be a trifle irreverent. Then, you have to enjoy silly games and serious conversation. I like people who are hip to little-known facts like, who played Humphrey Bogart's mother in Dead End? Sometimes I'll want you to stump me with your own questions. So, if you think you qualify, call me, Lee Leonard, on Plaza 7, 8866. And we'll see what kind of arrangements we can make.
WNBC New York, the big voice of Big Town USA, is the sound of conversation.
The time, 13 minutes before the hour. Next, Monitor on Stage. A chance to hear the nation's top stars in performances recorded live at leading theaters, nightclubs, and concert halls. Right now, Bob Newhart in the spotlight. And the topic is a delicate one involving pets.
I just closed up my apartment in Los Angeles. And one of the things that I had to send to Chicago, which is my home, was a cat. It was a Siamese. I didn't know this, but you have to get a little case, and you have to get a health certificate, and they give you pills you give to them, and it knocks them out, you know. And I've never seen a high cat before, you know. And the only way you can tell he's high is he keeps saying, like meow, man. But otherwise, you can't tell. I had kind of a traumatic experience, I think it was, with a cat. I didn't know this when I got it, but when a cat gets to be about, 8 months old, you have to make a decision. Now the thing is, are you going to keep it in the apartment all the time, or will you run free? She's going to run free. You don't have to make a decision. If you're going to keep him in the house, you better make a decision. One of the symptoms they tell me about the time you should start thinking about is when they start crawling up the drapes and walking across the top of the ceiling. They're very much like humans in that regard. And of course, this has been weighing on my mind for several weeks, and forget it if you try to put yourself in the cat's place. Just forget it. You've got to take a detached attitude toward this thing. So anyway, I made the decision. I decided to get George, Nutty George, fixed. They call it fixed. And it is fixed. Let me tell you. So I sent him to the vet, and I got him back in a couple days. And ever since then, all he does is sit on top of the television and just stare at me.
Monitor on Stage with Bob Newhart.
It's such a pretty world today.
Look at the sunshine.
Look at the sunshine.
And every day's the same since I met you.
It's such a pretty world today.
Knowing that you're mine,
knowing that you're mine,
and happiness is being close to you. And though the rain may fall, our skies will all be blue. The sunshine.
Look at the sunshine.
Today and every day since I met you. And though sunshine.
Look at the sunshine.
I met him.
The voice of Andy Russell on monitor. One of America's finest symphonic groups is the Philadelphia Orchestra, which recently completed its first tour of Japan. Eugene Armandy, its conductor and music director for 31 years, described the enthusiasm with which Japanese greeted both the orchestra and its famous conductor. He talked with Monitor reporter Frank Carter.
We followed the progress of the tour, of course, with a great deal of pride.
We followed more than that. We followed the reaction of the Japanese to our music making, and that we found beyond belief. For instance, but one thing we didn't know, that there are only about 70% grown up, so to speak, or middle-aged people there. The rest were students from age 12 to 20. Very musical students, with scores in their hands, marked. Everything I did was marked, unfortunately, in Japanese. So when at the end they asked me to sign my name on the score, these things I always reluctantly do, because I think it's sacrilegious to put a conductor's name on the score of a great master like Beethoven or Brahms. But I said, in fact, I asked them, what are those things that they marked? And they all smiled a little sheepishly. Well, what you did there, I marked down for myself. They all want to be conductors. And another thing is the recordings. You have no idea how many records they had. I'm speaking now only of our orchestra. There are hundreds that were put, literally hundreds, put before me.
To autograph.
Not only recent ones, as old as 30 years old records that I made 30 years ago, and as recent as 3 and 4 months ago. I always ask them, how did you get them so quickly? We just made them. And again, sheepish laugh, they won't tell you. It's a secret. Somebody smuggled it over. As soon as they come out, they get smuggled over to Japan. They are such music enthusiasts. They're crazy about the best music that it's possible for them to have.
Which composers did they respond to especially?
It's difficult to say, but of course, you wouldn't be surprised, and nobody can be surprised, if I mention that Beethoven, Brahms, Bach are still the favorites. But we played Mozart and Haydn, and they were very much liked, too. We played a lot of French music, and that was recognized and accepted.
And you conducted every concert, did you not?
Yes, I did, and I was very proud to do it. It was hard sometimes, because conducting was the time when I was really happiest, because then I didn't have to be interviewed, didn't have to attend any receptions or give lectures to musicians or would-be conductors or would-be great violinists, Yasha. I just had to conduct and concentrate on my music, so I always looked forward to it. Thank God I don't have to see people now. Until after the concert, there were hundreds, then hundreds, literally hundreds came over and made me sign the pictures, and my own pictures or programs or records, and 1 in every 10 had a little present for me, because they felt that paying for the ticket wasn't enough for what they received. So they all had a little present, and they always said very, very, very shyly, this is for you, maestro. And many of the men got similar presents. It was just wonderful how they treated our orchestra, as they should be treated.
A great tribute, I think.
Even in Philadelphia, they should be treated that way.
Thank you very much,
Thank
Mr.
you for
Armandy.
Talking to me.
Monitor reporter Frank Carter and Eugene Armandy, conductor of the Philadelphia Symphony Orchestra, reviewing the orchestra's reception during its recent tour of Japan. Currently, the Philadelphia Orchestra is spending its second summer season at the Saratoga Arts Festival, Saratoga, New York.
When I
Greensleeves, which has been around for quite a few dozen generations. The group belongs to the younger generation, however, and they're known as the Graduates. Right now, a message meant for you.
Get with living the exciting way. Drink sparkling champagne like nothing else you ever tasted. Nothing else except champagne. So put more sparkle in your life today with sparkling champagne.
Sophisticated? You'll feel that way with champagne. C-H-A-M-P-A-L-E. Tastes like champagne. Buy it wherever beer is sold. Costs just pennies more. Sparkling champagne malt liquor. Metropolis Brewery, Trenton, New Jersey. For the latest word on what's happening and where, stay with us for NBC Monitor News on the Hour, coming up next. This is Brad Crandall.
Keep tuned, the latest news now is on the air. Keep tuned for sports and views now is on the air.
Here's important news for you college freshmen, sophomores, and juniors. Now you can stay in college while you lay the groundwork for an exciting career in naval aviation. You train during 2 6-week summer sessions at sunny Pensacola, Florida. When you receive your college degree, you also receive a commission as a Navy officer. Aviation Reserve officer candidates may be single or married. For details, contact the U.S. Naval Air Station, New York, at Floyd Bennett Field, Brooklyn. Call Cloverdale 24242. Mrs. Lewis Nicolai of Farmingdale won $1,000. Mrs. Carol Lyons of Richmond Hill won $1,500. Mrs. Charlotte Coblin of Yonkers won $1,900. And Mrs. Angeline Needham of North Bergen won $2,000 by playing Fortune Phone with Sterling Yates on WNBC. Be a winner. Listen to Fortune Phone and make sure Sterling has your number. Fortune Phone, weekdays at 10 a.m. and again at 4 p.m., on WNBC. Beard the Lion in his den. Call Brad Crandall weeknights at 9 o'clock on Plaza 78866, WNBC, New York.